You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff editor at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of Locked On Pacers podcast. And as always, joining me for our weekly show is the man with too many titles, Mr. Tony East. Tony, how are you doing?
Good, Adam. I felt good breaking the story of the preseason schedule before it was released. Breaking news.
Breaking it on the podcast, you mean?
Yes, I got all four games right. I said they'd have no home games. It was great.
Yeah, but didn't the podcast got posted the next day, so then you were already late.
No. It came out Friday. I wrote about it on Tuesday. It came out on Friday.
Oh, okay. Do you get credit for breaking the news? I mean, does it really matter?
No, it
about
does not.
A preseason schedule?
Well, no one cares about the preseason, especially when they don't have a home game. But.
Yeah, and also it's the preseason, which...
Yeah, these games do not matter at all.
It's the most irrelevant basketball on the planet. I mean, right, you went to one last year. You went to that...
Yeah, they put Maccabi Haifa.
Right, in this... Didn't like Wilkins start the game like that? Somebody random started that game.
Yeah, it was bizarre. Like Josh Smith was on the other team and stuff. It was so crazy.
Yeah. So, congrats for the breaking of when you break. I'm sure you will break some bigger news during the season. I'm sure you will.
Yes, I will break the news that I have no sources.
No, you have some sources. You're building them slowly. I bet you'll break something during the season.
A sleuth in the night.
Yeah, you'll break something, and then you'll have to tell me how you're doing it, and we'll whatever. But you'll break something during the season, so people should keep eyes on you during the season because you'll break something. I'm sure.
Break it on the pod. That'll be great.
But that won't matter because the pod posts the next day. You got to break it on Twitter feed.
Pod immediately. That's just one sentence of me saying the news.
You could post a recording on your Twitter feed of you just breaking news.
Breaking news: : one sentence of me.
Yeah, just the Twitter line is just breaking news, and then it's a recording.
Well, here we go. Breaking news. Bovada thinks that Victor Oladipo has less chance of winning MVP than John Wall.
That's not breaking news, though.
Breaking news from 4 or 5 days ago.
Yeah. So like Tony said, so Victor Oladipo is a 100-1 odds to win the MVP. He is tied for 17th with Jokic and Jimmy Butler at 100-1 and Chris Paul. They're all four tied at 17. Some of the names obviously ahead of him are like LeBron James, Davis, Antetokounmpo, Harden, and then you got like Durant, Leonard, Westbrook, Curry, Embiid, Irving. Ahead of him is 35-1, and then Lillard, Karl-Anthony Towns at 50-1, DeRozan and Wall at 80-1, and Donovan Mitchell at 85-1. And that's the one I think that probably the most, right? Donovan Mitchell, 85-1.
As I quoted in my tweet, I put that I triple-taked, but I probably looked at that like 20 times to make sure I'm reading that right. Like Donovan Mitchell has better MVP odds than Victor Oladipo. It's just craziness.
So part of it has to do with the hype around Mitchell, right?
Narrative
or hype. Same. It's all the same.
Yes.
The fact that Mitchell was basically put himself into the rookie debate and as a fashion statement, as a basically most, I don't want to say obnoxious, but just like he basically elevated the rookie, who is a rookie debate with all his shirts and all his Adidas stuff. So that's and that kind of gained him some notoriety among the league and among fan bases and kind of got him some people liked him for it. You hate him for it, but it pushed him to a level that really Vic isn't at yet in terms of popularity.
Right. Yeah. And you know, he was really good for a team that needed it when Gobert was out and stuff, but he's clearly the best player of that draft class last year too. On the flip side, Victor Oladipo just made third team All-NBA and first team All-Defense, and Mitchell made neither of those. And I don't see how you think Mitchell's going to just jump him next year. Like, I don't know how the narrative can be that strong, you know? Like, I don't agree with me, but it's still crazy.
I mean, I don't agree with him being ahead of Vic, but I could see the scenario where he puts up 30 a game.
The Jazz maybe would have 60, and he'd have to score like 30 points a game. Him scoring 8 points a game on the same shooting percent, 8 more points a game on the same shooting percentage as last year, you'd have to shoot like 23 times a game.
I mean, so if you look around the league, there's probably only two, maybe three, four, but like two guaranteed teams that we think are better than Jazz, right? I mean, it's Houston and Golden State. Everybody else is on their level, basically.
Boston, but yeah, the Jazz are really good.
Yeah, I mean, Boston is probably better than them, but I wouldn't say like guaranteed better than them. And if, think about that. That means they could probably win 50 or 60 games if everything goes right. Gobert stays healthy. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. But they could be the surprising team like Houston was this year, sort of. They could be the
team. I don't think it's surprising anymore.
Well, if they got 60 wins, that'd still be surprising.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what I mean. If they win 60 games, it's going to be on the back of Gobert leading the number one defense and Mitchell scoring a ton of points, probably.
Dean, that's just my own opinion, which I get why a lot of people don't agree. And narrative doesn't help me here either. But, like, another thing about Mitchell being at 85-1 is, like, Gobert is better. Gobert, let me rephrase that. Gobert is a more impactful basketball player by, like, quite a bit. Like, he's the best rim protector in the NBA by a ton. He's a great screen and roll guy. He just sucks up the whole paint, and it allows people to do stuff on the perimeter. Like, vertical spacing is a thing, and Gobert offers a ton of vertical spacing. And he's just so good and impactful. And, like, the Jazz went on that crazy run in the second half of the year right when he came back from injury. And, I mean, I just – it's crazy to me that the not-as-good player has way higher MVP odds.
Well, I think it has to do with the same thing where Gobert's stats are also, like, any defensive player, the same way Draymond is underrated in the sense that it's – the behind the scenes almost. It's the non on the paper kind of stats. Right. And at the same time, if the Jazz are going to win 60 games, it's going to be Gobert being the same, but it's going to be on Mitchell making the improvement. You know what I mean? It's going to be on Mitchell pushing himself into one of the best guards in the league. It's not going to be on Gobert. Like, I don't think Gobert has anywhere else to go. Whereas not like Gobert's going to, I don't think he put up 20 points a game this year kind of level.
It's no, just, never. He never will.
Yeah. So that's the problem with that is that, I mean, what's Gobert? Gobert could be like a 16 and 14 guy close to that. If that's like the top scenario for him.
Yeah, he was 14 and 11 last year.
Yeah, so that's a little bit better. I mean, that's where he'd have to be at, and that's still probably not to win MVP because you're just not. I mean, unless you win like 70 games, like the or 65, like the way Nash did with the Suns, where he was an 18 and 12 guy, but his team was winning so many more games than everybody else. And even those MVPs for Nash are pretty debatable because Kobe had some better years there. I think Shaq had a better year in one of them too. Those are up in the air.
Nash was way better than Kobe.
What was it? One of the years that Shaq was there with him. I'm trying to remember. I can't. Maybe it was Duncan. There were both those MVPs. He won rightly, but like there's still some debate about who should have won it.
Or other good players, but he was unbelievable those 2 years.
I don't think maybe I don't think that was Kobe's.
League leading free throw percentage, league leading 3-point shooter. Like he was amazing.
I know, but I'm saying that like it. When you look back in hindsight, you could have said, "Oh, you could have made the case of why Shaq should have won." I think one of those years.
Problem with those is like you miss the whole point of narrative. Like when you're 10 years away.
Yeah,
that's why I miss on that too. And you just said that like the 65 wins and stuff like that. Like you just miss that when you're 10 years in retrospect.
Yeah, well, it's why I still think Jermaine O'Neal should have won the MVP. If you look at the narrative.
Screw narrative.
I mean, think about it. Jermaine O'Neal was on the best team in the NBA, had the number one defense. He was putting up 20 and 10, and he lost it to a guy whose team won 5 less games. Who, yeah, Garnett was great, but I think Jermaine O'Neal should have won the narrative debate that year.
Yeah, the brawl, man. He could have won it the brawl the year if he did not play the whole year. He was 24-9 that year.
I know. He would have won. If they hadn't had that brawl, he would have won the MVP. Okay, but going back
there's your title for the show today.
Yeah, there it is. going back to Vic, though. What would make you put, I don't know, a significant amount of money down on Vic? So let's say, what would make you put $100 on 101 to Vic? What would we have to do this year? What is kind of what has to happen for you to be confident in that or think about doing?
The lovely Ben Gibson wrote about this.
I read it.
Most MVP guys, per his research too, end up in the like 26, 28 points per game range. Vic could get there just by shooting more, but like just not who he is. So it's going to be that he, you know, finishes a little better at the rim to get his scoring up or hits more corner threes. You know, he improves his scoring by making a shot that he couldn't make as much last year. Always better from the free throw line. That's going to help him a ton because it just looks like when you hit the 25 point threshold, even people who don't watch your team just think you're really good because you're scoring 25 points every game. That's why DeRozan is so popular. And by the way, DeRozan's ahead of him too, so everyone can
get. But DeRozan's going to be on the Spurs, and also DeRozan went on the team.
He's going to be the number one option finally.
Yeah,
but yes, that'll be a huge part of it. And then Ben put this in there too. It's just going to be a lot on the team. Like if they win, like you said with the Jazz, if the Pacers win 60 games, you know Vic's going to be in that conversation much more than if they win the same amount as last year.
Right. So I think my special form is Vic is a 50-40-90 guy. That probably helps.
Put him in there. Oh, man. That seems like impossible.
What he was, what, I'm trying to look it up again. I'm trying to remember. He was, so it would have to, the free throw percentage might not get there, but last year he was 48, 37, and 80.
It's the free throw line. Was it 48? I thought it was lower than that.
47.7 if I rounded.
Oh, I don't know why I thought it was lower than that.
But at one point he was what, like, I mean, I know what, I mean, that was early on the year. He was like a
50. He was killed when the season started.
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, you've seen a 3-point percentage increase every year. So could that get a little higher? His 3-point shot is actually a very clean and good shot. Just sometimes it rolls out in a way that almost is unexplainable, I guess, sometimes. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, how many threes of him have been halfway down the bucket and then fall out? I feel like it happens a decent amount to him, more than other players, at least.
Maybe that's a product of the way he shoots. It can't be a coincidence, right?
No, he's kind of a line drive shooter, right? Yeah. In that sense.
Right.
But the corner three thing is important and kind of huge to talk about, because they rarely ran the plays for him to get the corner three. And the few times they did, he was just money from it. I mean, he would, I think in the playoffs, that was the biggest thing I thought with him, where he kept getting the ball. When he got the ball at the corner, I think it was the right corner three, he would just hit that every time. And they just went into
enough. 9.9% of his three-pointers were from the corner, and he made 58% of those in the regular season.
Yeah. And do you know what, I mean, you can look it up, but I wonder what like Steph Curry's rate is. You know what I mean?
Playoffs, Oladipo took 10.5% of his threes from the corner and made 2 out of every 3 of those.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's right.
Thank you for asking, Adam.
Yeah, because like that's why, and that's the biggest thing with Steph Curry too, in his just jump at the 3-point shooters, that he gets a ton of good looks from the corner, and those are really good. Those are
huge. 45% of them.
Yeah, those are huge when you get those corner threes, because I would say from inside about 20 feet, Vic is pretty solid. Two-point jumper, which is what a corner three basically is. And I guess part of that is figuring out the spacing around the floor, putting when other guys are in that are more of a threat, allow him to move. But if they could get him to move, especially if they can find a good ball handler to let him move off the screen, like move off the ball, and they set screens on places and all that stuff off the ball, that could be kind of the difference. Because, right, if he probably shoots 38 or 39% from three and gets and takes a couple more free throws, he's at 25 to 27 points a game.
Yeah, I was editing this, and I asked him to see if we could throw in some tidbit about how much the free throw percentage helps. Like, he gets almost half a point a game just by getting 85% from the line. Like, and he is close to doing that before. You know, he's working on it. You know, I think that's an easy improvement too. Like, there's just so many little tiny scoring improvements that he could make, or that the team could like kind of alter to make it happen. But at the same time, it's like not the way he plays. You know, like I tried to say that, but it's like it's not him. If that makes sense.
Yeah, he plays more from the top of the key. It's just like
right. Well, and he's just never gonna be a guy who like takes an extra shot for an award. You know, like he's just not gonna do that.
Well, no, that's like the other point I would say with Vic that could be the difference, is that he could theoretically be a 25-8-7 guy, kind of, I think.
Well,
maybe 2 steals a game.
Yeah. Well, yeah. My counterpoint too is like he just made first team all defense, and that like putting all that effort on that end of the court means his offensive stats will take a small hit. Like if he wants the MVP offensive stats, he's not going to be first team all defense.
Yeah, but his defense leads to his offense a lot too.
Yeah, it does. That too.
Right. If you say he has 2.5 steals a game, that might be 5 free points a game theoretically.
Yeah.
Because each one turns into an easy 20 basketball for him sometimes.
Yep. That's true.
But like he did show this skill, I thought, in the playoffs a little bit, especially in game 6 and towards the end of the season, where he can be a high assist player. I mean, if he can be the kind of player to look to set other guys up, and that could sort of be where he becomes an MVP, because he can put together the points with, you know, 7 assists and 7 rebounds. A 27-7 line is really solid line with, you know, close to 50-40-90 in the defense. I mean, that should be a lot. At least push him into a top five.
He was 23-8-6 in the playoffs. Like, that's nuts. That's insane.
Yeah, and he sucked for 2 of the playoff games anyways.
He did suck for one of those. Two of those games.
Two. I would say though, game 5, he kind of redeemed himself when he almost.
Bojan makes it hard to remember that he was not very good in game 3, but yes.
Yeah, and I think game 5. Well, first of all, Vic's layup should have gone in, so that would have kind of changed the narrative if they made that layup, and then LeBron doesn't make the 3.
Yeah.
Because then that would have been like Vic went toe to toe with LeBron and beat him, whatever, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, but like that's the one thing though you see about Vic too is also his confidence. And I wonder what it's going to be like when he has a full year of confidence versus like, I know he probably had it from the start, but really from day one, knowing I can beat anybody anywhere on the court.
Yeah.
And you know, how much that would just change him. And the one worry is he becomes a stupidly high volume shooter, but I think he sort of realized last year towards the end that it's he's got to get other guys involved enough to not – he can't become Westbrook essentially. He has to be sort of the balance between being a Westbrook-level shooter and kind of a solid assister.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Yeah. Is there anything else with the MVP odds that sort of bothered you?
Jimmy Butler being behind Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah. I think – is that the thought that Butler might get traded or that Butler might
– maybe just because he plays so much.
Yeah, I might get hurt again. I don't know.
I have no idea. I feel like Butler's better, but that's just me.
I'm not really sure Ben Simmons should be ahead of Vic on this list either.
Oh, I do. I can see how that happens easily.
I just don't. I just don't see how he does it. So he can't shoot, and it's not like LeBron couldn't shoot. Like Ben Simmons just won't even shoot.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? That's good. He's not taking shots that are bad shots.
Yeah, but that caps his offensive ceiling, and at some point,
yeah, now,
yeah, I mean, teams that have a better defender on the perimeter are going to figure out how to exploit that.
LeBron was an all-star and borderline MVP candidate at his young ages, shooting like 31% from three every year.
Well, it's because LeBron also was playing on a team where he could literally take like 70 shots because there was nobody else in those teams.
You know, Simmons is going to be like a 9-9 guy on the rebounds assist too, which will help him quite a bit. If he can get to 29. Yeah. Like, that's sick.
But he probably can't even get to 20 points. That's the problem.
16 last year.
I mean, LeBron scored 27 in his second year in the league.
Yeah.
He scored 20 in his first.
You just said he could take 45 shots a game if you wanted.
Okay, but like this myth, LeBron shot 47% and 35 from three his second year in the league.
The biggest thing hindering Simmons' odds is that he might not be the best player on his own team. So that will not help him.
I'm just tell me how Simmons is going to get the 20 points. I mean, honestly, I don't know how he does it.
Four shots a game is not very hard.
He needs a particular kind of shot per game. You know what I mean? It's not like he has the ability to just drain 18 footers. He's got to have a certain kind of inside drive in floater shot almost.
Shooting right handed.
Okay. I think we're probably 2 years away from Simmons being where it is. Because he didn't take enough chances with his shot to improve.
LeBron's original teams were bad. Like, the Simmons team is very good.
Yeah, but it's good because of all the other guys, too, as well. It's not just...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying that.
No, I just think the problem with Simmons is that he didn't really get the chance to experiment with his shot, where I feel like LeBron, at least in his first few years, was at least attempting threes, was at least, like, experimenting with his awkward shot, where Simmons, I don't see where he's experimenting unless he's doing it off the court.
But they're going to... five games. They don't want him experimenting.
But then the problem is, how's he ever develop it then? You know what I mean? There is some merit in being bad for 2 years because it helps you get better in the long run.
He doesn't need it.
But in the long run, he's going to. Like,
no, he's not. He's already super impactful. He doesn't need to shoot.
No, but if he wants to be the best player in the league, he's got to shoot a three-point shot.
Well, that's a different question.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is I think those first 2 years where LeBron had a crappy team and he could do whatever he wanted helped him develop into the player to become the best player in the league because he was able to basically develop his shot, where Simmons is going to be stuck in his middle limbo the rest of his career.
I'm not going to compare Simmons to LeBron.
Why not?
Because LeBron is the best player of all time and Ben Simmons will not be the best player of all time.
Okay, but Simmons has the ability to have a LeBron-like impact if he can shoot a jump shot.
Yes. So right. Give him 4 years it gave LeBron to get there, and maybe it will happen.
LeBron was putting 27 points in year two, shooting 47%.
Yes.
And 35 from three. I don't know if Simmons could get there.
And then the next 2 years, he shot below 32% from three.
Then he still put up 31 a game, though, because he was getting fouled all the time.
Yes, that's true.
I'm just saying, I just don't know where Simmons needs to have that year where he just is – horrible from three, but is taking three so we can develop it.
I'll tell you what, a team that will let him take as many as he wants is in Indiana and will gladly give up someone like Thaddeus Young for him.
Okay. No, I'm just saying he needs those years of experiment to be able to sort of grow. And I'm not sure he's going to. I think this could be that year is all I'm trying to say. This could be the year.
Give me your 30-second thoughts of answer. Is Ben Simmons the perfect point guard next to Oladipo?
I guess it will. It depends.
Very close. Very close.
It's close because the problem with Simmons, again, is you have to get a better shooter at small forward then.
Yeah, I agree.
But with Simmons, you could afford to actually play like Collison too in the game and make Simmons guard forward.
You get just the defense and the creation and the rebound. Yeah, wow. That would be a crazy good backcourt.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I think this, in my opinion, this is the year where Simmons sort of takes some more threes, experiments the jump shot, and has sort of struggles. But in the long run, it's a good thing for him. That's just my thought.
Maybe that would be good. If Embiid gets hurt, maybe they go for that strategy.
I think they still, I mean, you know, this isn't like a championship or bust year for them, really, is it? It's not really that way. I think this is a...
They have a pretty good title chance. They have a good get to the finals.
But, like, if they lost second round again, I'm not sure it's like the Philippines are going to start riding in the streets kind of stuff. Like, that's what I mean. It's the kind of thing where you're still looking long-term. You're like, yeah, they're not going to win this year, but two or three years. And this could be the kind of year where they, you see some more of the experimenting among the players of, like, just trying to, like, work through some of their rougher parts of their game.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing holding Simmons back that makes 35-1 possibly too high is that he's got a guy who's going to average 23-12 on his team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with, like, with Durant and Curry as well, is they're going to cancel each other out. I think the John Walls are a little high, but that's just me.
Yeah, me too, especially with Beal's emergence last year. But if we, again, like I said before the show, I hate that we always say, like, what we said before the show. Should we just start recording the second we start talking?
No, because it helps work through our shit.
It's true. People would love our off-the-cuff conversation.
You can record it and save it for later.
I don't think Wall should be above Vic. I think 81's too high, for sure. But, you know, 16-17 Wall made All-NBA. Like, he's probably the third best point guard in the league. This is so random that that year, the three best point – he's probably fourth. The best point guards were Russ, Curry, IT, and Wall. Like, what happened in a year?
Wall got hurt, and Isaiah Thomas got hurt. That's all that happened. And Steph Curry got hurt, too.
Yeah. Everybody got hurt.
That's still a top three point guard, right? Probably.
No, right. I'm saying end that season. Like, it's crazy that it's changed so much from then.
It wasn't Harden that in an All-NBA team that year? I mean, he's a point guard, essentially.
Yep. He was a point guard that year. You're right. That was the year before Paul. But that year, he was amazing. But then that last year, he didn't try at all and only played half the games. So it depends what Wall is there. And I have no idea which one it will be, but that's why I feel like 81's really high. And they have other good players on their team. Like, Beal's going to average over 20 a game. So,
yeah, and you're underrating the curse of Dwight Howard.
I think the curse of Dwight Howard is overrated, honestly. Kemba Walker all week was like, Dwight was a dope dude. Like,
yeah, but it seems like everybody else hates him usually.
It's bizarre. I feel like front office people hate him and players don't hate him. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes in Washington. It has massive implosion potential, though.
Well, it also has the – every time Dwight goes to him, you always talk yourself into him, too. It's like, oh, man, he could run with guys. Yeah. And
stuff. I wrote about Dwight last year on the Hornets. I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah. The problem is he's just too old at this point to really have a huge impact. But but I'm just saying that could affect it. Because there also was the issue with Wall and Gortat last year. That was a big underrated.
Yeah, they hated that dude.
I don't know why. I honestly like Gortat. I think he's a solid player. I think he's a little old now, but he's a solid player.
Good screener. Yeah, I hope the Clippers like his screens.
Yeah, I'm trying to – I mean, I guess I don't understand why Chris Paul is tied with him for odds, but that doesn't really bother me. How he's ahead of Paul George. It's just funny to me.
Yeah, that's funny. That is funny. Paul George in the group right behind him with LaMarcus Aldridge. Yeah, Paul George is probably even that high because he can only – like, the only way he would win is if Russ gets hurt, like, the first game.
Yeah, but if Russ gets hurt, that team is screwed because they're so lack of depth, basically. I mean, if Russ –
Paul George has worse teams than that to the playoffs before.
Yeah, I guess, but he played in worse conference. The worst conference is the key.
Huh?
Paul George played in the worst conference. That's why he carried them in the playoffs. That's true. He couldn't carry them in the West. He could not have been in the West.
How about the shocking Lonzo Ball appearance?
It's just for show.
And yeah, people bet on that, right? It's a betting line, you're right.
It's just a betting line. It's not like an order. It's just a betting line to have.
Yeah. I got nothing else. We talked a lot about MVP.
Yeah, let's take a quick pause and we'll have another topic when we come back from this. All right, welcome back into Locked On Pacers podcast. For our second and last topic of today, we have sort of been trying to think of some evergreen topics. So one, if anybody out there has some interesting topics they want us to discuss, feel free to tweet at us or send us messages at our Locked On Pacers account. Obviously, that would help. Anything you want to hear, feel free to do it. But for today, we decided we're going to talk about the best non-Vic, non-Tyreek Evans lineup. We decided to do this, one, because Tyreek is somewhat injury prone, so there's a chance he gets hurt. And obviously, Vic got hurt for 7 games last year. So if both got up hurt at the same time, do the Pacers really have a shot at winning any games? Because they didn't last year, and they might be different this year. So, Tony, you want to start with the lineup you kind of devised?
Yes, I would love to. So your guard rotation is now incredibly thin because with no Lance, there's no twos anymore. And I don't think CJ Wilcox is in any sort of best lineup without anybody. So I think your two guards have to be Collison Joseph, just because you get your shooting and your perimeter defense, and there's not really another option unless you feel like Aaron Holiday makes more sense than either of those guys. And spoiler, I do not. At the three, I'm going to go with Bojan because you're going to need some shot creation, and he can actually dribble more than people talk about. At the four, I would like Thaddeus Young because I just like that. You know what? I'll back up here. I'm going to say just put Corey Joseph in the starting five instead of Vic. I'll just skip all the reasonings.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I think that's what I would do.
I worry that it's too small. There's not enough defense for the first. I guess Joseph isn't defense, but there's not enough defense for the first from the first three positions, basically.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's hard to find it there. But who are you replacing to have more defense in the group?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no lineup, but the question is though, could the lineup you picked beat the Orlando Magic? Let's say, that's like.
I just was about to confidently say yes, but I don't know if the answer is yes.
Because that's the key. I mean, right? If Vic's out, you're not going to beat the good teams. But can you stay afloat by beating teams you should beat? You know, can you beat Atlanta? Can you beat Dallas? Can you beat Sacramento? That's the key. Because right, I mean, like if you lose to like a Milwaukee or a Philly, like at least you might have still lost if Vic was there or not. Anyways,
right.
But if you lose to a team like Atlanta, you're sort of losing ground, per se.
Yes, that makes way more sense. And I think the games they lost with Vic, I need to have that list in front of me all the time. Like every time I start talking about this, the Dallas one is really the only one that was like they could have won that they should have won that even without him, right?
Yeah, I think the Minnesota game they were in for a little bit. They got blown out so bad in the first quarter of that game. Right?
He missed. Good Lord.
I'm going to pull it up
real quick. He missed Charlotte, that game that everybody missed, so they wouldn't have won that one with him.
You know, the big one that reminds me is that Washington game actually missed. They could have won it.
They had no Collison, too.
They were in the game, remember? They were in it pretty late. Bojan played really well and everything.
So at Chicago, they could have won that one, too. But I think there was only two obvious ones. It's Dallas and Chicago.
Yeah, the Dallas one is super obvious. That one's Lance
lost. Lost by 12. They got thumped. Yeah, that one was rough.
Lance lost that one for them.
Yes, he did. Lance lost the Dallas one too. That turnover at the end.
Yeah, that's the Dallas one, not the Bulls one. The Bulls one, I think, was just that the game of Mirotić just went off, or is that another game?
Yeah, I think so. No, Markkanen and Mirotić went off. I remember we talked about that game on like three podcasts in a row.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Markkanen had 32. Yeah.
Yeah, I think. So yeah, you look at. Nice. Did they play Dallas? They played Dallas twice. They played Chicago twice in that stretch, actually.
Yeah, they won one of them.
Oh, they did. You're right. Did he come back for that? He came back for that one, right?
Yeah, he was playing. He hit the game winner. Remember, they were losing the whole game, and then
no, that was one earlier in the year.
Oh, okay, my bad.
That game was in November.
My bad.
They played the Bulls a lot. No, that was actually early December. That was right when Vic started his run.
They will play them again four times this year.
Shocker.
Yes. So there were only two games. Sorry, I forgot what we were talking about. Yeah, they only lost two games that they probably could have won without him. But I agree that. If you assume no Tyreek is playing either now, does McDermott over nobody and O'Quinn over Al Jefferson, basically, are those enough changes to win two of the, like, against the bad teams?
So my lineup I have is, do you just go for a complete offense? Do you just say we can just outscore you possibly? So do you go DC, Bojan at the two, Doug Durant at the three, Young and Turner?
Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be
weird. I mean, right? Could that team could beat the Chicago? If Chicago was shooting the way they were shooting, that team could have beaten the Bulls possibly if they shot that well.
Yeah,
right. The Bulls didn't. I mean, what I'm looking at again is when you look at this, right? They missed seven games and they played three teams who were really bad, or three games against bad teams, two against the Bulls, one against them, Mavs and Bulls, and they played that Wizards game. They should have won. I think they should have won. And those are the kind of could the offensive lineups have won those games per se?
Right, that's true. Or you go all defense even, and have Kojo in there and have. And have Miles, Thad, and then whoever the heck you want on the wings. Just punt for it. I don't know who that would be. Actually.
The problem is you don't have enough. You don't have any good wing, really small forward defenders.
Yeah.
Like you don't have Glenn Robinson.
Better defender than McDermott or Bojan? That is the question.
Yeah. I guess the real answer to this whole thing is Vic can't get hurt.
The exercise has concluded the way we anticipated it would. The best
no, but the
miss games.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to keep harping at it, but again, the key is also, again, is Turner much better and can Turner carry an offensive load?
I want people to factor that into their win projections for the Pacers. Think about that. Sure. Victor Oladipo happens to have a very serious injury. Where do they land, you know?
Well, no, you can't guess on them. That's not worth. That's you not how you do things. Why?
Every team is healthy. That's even more ridiculous.
But you kind of can, because, like, what, are you supposed to factor in if LeBron gets hurt?
Yes.
So then you're basically saying every team's gonna be lower than five wins. I mean, how do you factor it in? You know what I mean?
You just okay. The Lakers will probably win if they're healthy the entire season, like 48 to 50 games. Oh, but LeBron gets hurt, then they could win less. So I will just hedge on that and say like 44, 45.
Yeah, but is that enough of a hedge, really?
I'm not saying he misses the whole year.
No, but then at that point, you're basically telling people, oh, just bet on LeBron being healthy, which is a better chance than not. You know what I mean? It's different when a player has an injury history.
Like Vic?
Well, Vic doesn't have an extreme injury history. He missed seven games.
He misses games every season.
He missed seven games last year. Like, what's his name? The big injuries.
Since his rookie year, he's missed seven or more every year.
Yeah, but that's not a ton of injury misses.
No, but you're going to lose a lot of those games.
No, but that's why you have Tyreek Evans, and you're factoring that.
Oh, yes, hopefully Tyreek helps with that, but still.
But I'm saying if
Vic missing time is bad.
Most players miss. I would say miss 5 to 7 games a year, right? I mean, I think very few players get to 82 besides like James Harden's done a bunch. Curry doesn't. Kevin Durant might. I know LeBron played 75 for a couple years in a row until last year, right? Yeah. So like you're already factoring in most of these guys don't play 82 games.
Steph missed 4, 4, 2, 3, 3, 5 of the last 6 years.
Four. What do you mean?
So this past year, Steph was hurt. Before that, he played 79, then 79, then 80, then 78, then 78.
Yeah.
Homie never gets hurt.
Steph never gets hurt? That what you're telling me?
Yeah, for the last 5 years, he's only missed four games or less.
Yeah, but then you have to factor in that he had two major ankle injuries last year that were pretty, like, non-fluky in almost in some sense, it felt like.
I don't know.
Then you're not counting that he got hurt in the playoffs 2 years ago, or 3 years ago. You're just completely discounting that he missed three of the playoffs.
They would have won the championship. That's so dumb.
Yeah, so, I mean, he really got hurt, what, two of the last four seasons, let's say, three seasons.
Yes.
So you so they didn't miss the regular season per se. He did get hurt.
Humongo minutes. Well, we're just looking at games played.
I know, but I think that's his injury recurrence is factored in that he had that cute bad injury in the playoffs. That's a huge factor in him.
Who cares about the playoffs, Adam?
I'm just saying. I'm just saying for win totals, the problem you have is that if you bet on guys being hurt, then you're basically like you have
the issue. I do that every time I guess a team's wins as I factor in injuries.
Yeah, but then you're having too low of a win total almost, and it'd be either take the over most of the time because you're just, you know what I mean? Like, Vegas is getting screwed then, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Vegas definitely factors them in, so.
Not that, who do they factor them for? I'm trying to think what are the win totals that are like, by injuries. Like the Pacers isn't really factored by injury, I'm assuming.
47.5?
For the Pacers? That's about what I would say it was a fair.
For sure over 50.
If they're completely healthy?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
They won 48 last year with Turner missing 20, Vic missing 7. Perfectly healthy plus two.
So what I mean is they're probably factoring in that kind of injury, but they're not factoring in catastrophic injury.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm not going to factor in catastrophic injury. That's impossible.
Well, I think that's what you were kind of saying with that. You know what I mean?
No.
Because then, but I think even if everybody's healthy, 48 is a reasonable number, in my opinion.
It could be.
I mean, chemistry stuff.
Because of clutch play and injuries. This conversation has gone off the rails.
Yeah, it has a little bit. So let's get back to my lineup. It's just do you think the DC, Bojan, McDermott, Thad, Turner lineup could work, I guess?
Yeah, they'd have so much spacing for none of their shotgun. They'd have to run, like, really good plays. I mean, with Corey Joseph, they would too, but, like, that's how they would be able to succeed because they are going to have no creation off the dribble. We're counting on Bojan a lot in both of these units.
The question is, I guess, if you flip Turner with Sabonis, could that lineup actually be better?
Does that help? I mean, maybe with some shot creation, but you're...
Well, you run everything out of the post. You run, like, almost the Al Horford...
You could do that. Al Horford style. I love to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they do, right? That's what... They used to do it with Kevin Love in Minnesota, where you just... You give him up the top of the key, set a screen, get a switch, and then you run it from there.
Run horns every time, baby.
Yeah. And when you have an elite kind of center passer, that's where it helps. Did you see the video? I guess we talked about it, but the video of Turner
in the
looking pretty good in against a bunch of white dudes in the gym.
Yes, the one or two times a season he takes that shot, I'm glad he will hit it. I hope he takes a very few.
He does look like not as well. Top heavy is the right way to put it.
Yeah, I didn't notice that as much as you did.
I didn't notice it last year that he seemed like his chest. I thought it was because he put more muscle on his chest, but then when you see the pictures of him, that assurance looked like it was just kind of more weight, not more muscle.
Nice.
Just because when you see him doing some of the yoga poses, you see that he looks a little more like, I don't know, cut. I guess cut is the word I keep using this episode, but like sort of. That's what I mean when you're like you can see your muscles more and less fat on you, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, if Turner could do that, what he was doing, I mean, obviously he's playing against a bunch of scrubs in the gym, so it doesn't really matter. But if he could do that in real life, man, he would be the best player in the league.
Throw it into him on the inbounds, man. Let him go.
I mean, that's probably what when Larry Bird said Turner could be the best player in the league, that's probably what he was envisioning him being able to do. Which, in Turner's defense, when he puts the ball on the ground a couple times, when he's not, you know, stupidly going right into guys in offensive fouls, he does a decent job getting around guys with those kind of layup kind of stuff.
I'm going to look really dumb when I said he's only going to shoot that twice in the year when, like, game one, he puts Jaren Jackson Jr. on skates with a crossover.
Yeah. I don't know. The thing with Turner, again, is it his lack of opportunity the past 3 years, the reason we haven't seen him become what he becomes, or is it just because they don't trust him to do that kind of stuff?
He changed roles, too, like, last year. So I'm not saying, like it was a lack of opportunity last year. I think we just all misread the expectation.
And I think the injury is, again, a big thing because he was never able to assert himself as the dominant player. If Vic became dominant before, he gave him a term injury, and then he had to just kind of fit in.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like the kind of player. He's not the personality that comes in and demands the ball kind of thing. He's just not that kind of player.
Everyone's like, oh, he needs to get the ball in the post and be more sure. I'm like, that's not him. That's coaching. Stop blaming him not getting post touches on him.
I do want to say before the podcast, I did say, let's try not to talk about Turner and Sabonis. And again, we develop into Turner.
Hey, we're not talking about them together.
I know. I was trying to talk about some of the guards for once. We feel like we talk about Turner every episode, but I don't know. I think
next week, let's just talk about Doug McDermott the whole show. We never talk about Doug McDermott.
Well, I'm thinking like Thad and Bogut maybe for a little while.
Yeah, Thad and Bogut and McDermott. The forward
DC and Court and Kojo. You're right. They're not interesting enough.
The obvious forward show.
Well, we'll see what happens in September. but I think with Turner, the thing is do they make a concerted effort this year to let him develop? I mean, right? I said the same with Simmons. Is sometimes you have to fail to get better. You have to actually like just give an opportunities to screw up to get better. And when your team has expectations to win 50 games, you're not always given the opportunity because you're sort of like you have to fit in and it takes longer to develop. Whereas sometimes these guys that are like, I think David Booker is a great example of a guy who can be on a team and just do whatever the hell he wants for 2 years because they don't care if they win 20 games. And now he's kind of developed into a player where now they have expectations, but he's at a different level than he would be if he was on like some, you know, as the, I'm trying to think of like the fifth guy on the Pacers or the fifth guy on the Warriors team kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. But they can't afford to blow some games for him to develop.
But like, that's, I don't know. I mean,
they would like to.
Yeah. And you could, the thing is you have to make an effort to try it against some of the bad teams first. And then if it works to kind of give them a chance against some of the better teams.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see how it works. Because I do think, though, the easy way is just to let him play with the bench unit more and then make the bench, you know, offense run through him and see if it works.
That would be great.
Because at the worst case scenario, you're just hurting your bench unit, which doesn't always matter that much.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And I think now there's no Lance. That's going to be huge because now there's no obvious Tyreek is the obvious kind of score, but he's not the same type of like – there's no obvious ball hog on the bench anymore who just needs the ball to do everything. There's more of an ability like, oh, we can sort of – we're willing to, you know, Benjamin's willing to give Turner a chance kind of stuff.
Right.
So.
Right.
We'll see.
Nothing for today.
Yeah, I think I'm out of stuff for now. You're doing a fan show this week?
I am doing a fan show this week. If you're listening right now, I either have hit you up or will be hitting you up very shortly for this week's show.
Yeah, so as always, if you want to be on the show as a fan, you can – it's easier just DM us. It's much easier. So the DM either at TEASTNBA, me at FreemanAdam5, or at Locked On Pacers. I think we're going to do that until basically the preseason starts, right? We're going to do as many fans as we can.
Probably. Yeah, end of September, training camp time.
Yeah, until we have some more weekly content stuff, because we don't mind doing a second show a week if people want to be on and just discuss Pacer stuff for a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just make sure you guys have a topic. You can pick anything you want. You can do 90. You can do old Pacer stuff, new Pacer stuff, whatever. Just any kind of topic, and be prepared to talk about Pacers.
Be prepared. I'm coming at you with heat this week, boys.
Yeah, I did my first one last week. So if the second fan show I do, and now I'm not getting a better hang of it. So I'll be coming harder and more challenging. All right. I think that's all we got for his Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, I said, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. Leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to this podcast. That'd be fantastic. It helps boost our rating and helps us look good in the network. As always, we'll be back later in the week with a fan pod show, and we'll have our weekly show once again next Monday. What's up?
One more thing, Adam, we forgot. We crossed 100,000 downloads this year last week. Thank you guys so much. That's awesome.
Yes, that was awesome.
For the year.
Yeah, and we started on a new system. Like, what was it, January we started with audio? Yep. With Megaphone, I mean. So really, it's like 6 months of the year, we got over 100,000 listens already. So,
also, tiny one other thing. We'll have him on the show later just to give him a promo. But Locked On Colts now has a host, Cody Felger. So look for him on Twitter, too.
Yeah, I've hit him up. So we'll see. We're trying to figure out time to come before the regular season starts. I always can talk Colts. I'm probably not nearly as good at doing a podcast on the Colts, but I can always talk about the Colts because, sadly, I follow them, and I don't know. I'm worried about them this year, but that's for another show. As always, been Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.